Welcome to After the End from the EHOC Centre at the University of Oxford, funded by the Wellcome Discovery Award Scheme. In this series, we explore endings and their aftermaths. Who decides when an end has been reached? Whether the end for one person is the end for everybody? And what happens after these so-called ends? I'm Patricia Kingori, Professor of Global Health Ethics at the University of Oxford. I'm the lead investigator on the After the End project, an 8-year collaboration bringing together researchers from around the world. Our principal focus is what happens in the aftermath of global health crises. But what do endings look like in other contexts? Do cultural perspectives influence our perception of time? Does time exist? In July 2024, I brought together a group of people from very different disciplines, all experts in their own fields, to explore these ideas at a workshop in Oxford. The discussions were fascinating and thought-provoking, and this podcast series captures some of them. I hope you enjoy listening. Our first guest is Miranda Lowe, CBE, a principal curator in the Department of Life Sciences at the Natural History Museum in London, who is going to introduce us to the immortal jellyfish.
I work behind the scenes with the historical oceanographic collections at the Natural History Museum. At the beginning of July 2024, I was participating in a conference entitled After the End. The project is run by Patricia Kingori, based at Oxford University. And I met Patricia probably 2 or 3 years ago because she is on my board of trustees for an arts charity called Culture And. But I'm also on the board of visitors at Oxford University Museum of Natural History. I got chatting with Patricia over a cup of tea about the After the End project. The ideas really sparked my interest, the curiosity in my mind. Because of where I work at the museum, I'm often, as a curator and a marine biologist here, curating and doing research into, well, historical collections are actually dead things, but my research informs the living. And I was talking to Patricia about what it means to curate natural science collections at the museum, but also one example is the immortal jellyfish. I was explaining how the immortal jellyfish is as small as a pea, a thimble-shaped organism. For those of us that don't partake in sewing, a thimble is a small metal thing that you would place over your thumb to protect it from any needles. So the immortal jellyfish is extremely tiny, a couple of millimetres across. It's dome-shaped, but the bottom of the animal is in a square and it has 4 tentacles hanging from each side. But the amazing thing about such a tiny organism like that, it can potentially live forever. In terms of the general life cycle for jellyfish, what we would recognise as an actual jellyfish is the medusae stage. So adult jellyfish with the curved shaped bell, that's the medusae stage. And then it would go to the male and the female jellyfish releasing egg and sperm, free floating in the ocean, and they meet together and they fertilise. And then you get the larval stage, which again is free swimming. So jellyfish larvae will settle on a substrate, which could be either the ocean floor or on other organisms that are free floating in the ocean. That larvae then goes into another stage of maturity, into a polyp, and that polyp will grow, elongate. Then the polyp buds off into an immature adult, and then the next phase is going back full circle into a mature jellyfish medusae stage, and then the process repeats itself again. But for the immortal jellyfish, it skips the larval phase. So it goes straight from the adult to the polyp stage. And it can do this under environmental stress. So, for instance, we're talking a lot about climate change and the ocean temperature rising. And that affects jellyfish in general. So the immortal jellyfish is affected too. because if you look at a jellyfish, the nature of its body, it's really an organized body of water, very translucent, hard to see. But some are slightly opaque, so some you can see better than others. And because they are so fragile and gelatinous in nature, they're potentially very much at risk of these dynamics in the ocean, as well as risk of predation. We don't know when, but it seems that they have adapted to that environmental stress or any stresses put on them to skip the larval stage. But we are still studying that. There is a gentleman called Shin Kubota, based in Japan, that has spent the last 30 years studying this animal. Again, it's very tricky to study any kind of deep sea animal in the ocean over a long period of time because of all the variables, environments, temperatures, predation. So Shin actually studies them in a closed environment, in an aquarium system, introducing various environmental stresses, but you can monitor that better over time. You can see the changes without a lot of other external factors, apart from the introduced ones. There's a risk there in terms of the research, because you've got an immortal animal, such as that jellyfish. It's living forever. Us as human beings don't live, well, at least physically forever. We might live spiritually forever, depending on what your beliefs are. So Shin is over 65 now, and the risk there is about how this research is going to continue. Is it going to be another lab? And I have heard that there is another lab in Italy that is doing some studies on the immortal jellyfish, perhaps not in the same way as Shin. And he has 30 years worth of data. So that's really valuable and crucial to continued work and science on this animal. Who is he going to pass it on to? Is the funding that he has sustainable? Also, in terms of the institution that he works at as well, as we know, projects begin and end, but this is a project that needs to potentially never end. So we need, in terms of science, to look at how things are funded, how we achieve long-term funding. Sustainability of funding actually impacts the sustainability of the study of the animal and the creature itself in the environment that it lives in. Jellyfish in general have a cyclical cycle. And so we need that knowledge about this animal to be passed on, and for that knowledge to be valued as well. And for other researchers to be as passionate as Shin has been about the study of such a tiny creature, but has potentially some amazing applications, perhaps for us as human beings, and longevity of life and the study of other animals, because this animal is part of a huge ecosystem within the marine environment. So studying it is really, really important. The study in terms of the genetics of the animal too. A lot of molecular research is revealing how close relationships between animals that perhaps visually don't look like one another, but genetically are closely linked, could have an impact in terms of the study of certain diseases, in terms of our human aging process physically. So I think it's really important to ask those questions, to think about the knowledge base, where it comes from, where it sits, where the data sits digitally. Jellyfish in general are the oldest multicellular organism in the ocean, over 500 million years old. So they've outlived the dinosaurs. Turritopsis dawnii, also known as the immortal jellyfish, was discovered in the 1880s. And in 1881, the Natural History Museum was opened in South Kensington in what is now known as the Museum Quarter. At that time, oceanographic scientists were going on various expeditions to explore how deep was the world's oceans, how many species it had, what did the animals look like in the deep, dark oceans. And one very historic expedition in the 1870s, known as the Challenger Expedition. A lot of material from the expedition came to the Natural History Museum in London. And this is where scientists were beginning to discover those really weird and wonderful and interesting animals, studying them in the labs behind the scenes here. And alongside that, the immortal jellyfish was discovered. Its properties of immortality were not discovered immediately. It wasn't until near enough 100 years later in the 1980s, by accident, two students based in Italy in a lab, they were actually investigating something else, but came across its regenerative properties, how it could skip the larval stage and literally reverse its cells, go back and forth to make it immortal. At the height of all this discovery of new species from the oceans, the museum was actually displaying a lot of the new material in the galleries because not everybody had access to go on expedition or to visit the coast. The museum was a place for education to spark curiosity, care, interest, further questions for scientific study. And alongside those actual animals, such as jellyfish, were the Blaschke glass models of marine invertebrates made by Rudolf and Leopold Blaschke, which included certain types of jellyfish, such as the moon jellyfish, Aurelia aurita, which you can find around the British coast, the upside-down jellyfish. There unfortunately isn't one of the immortal jellyfish, but the mere fact that the Blaschkes made these models as teaching models so that people could learn and see the shape and the form and the colour and also appreciate the translucency and the fragility through glass of animals such as jellyfish. And in fact, by them creating these jellyfish models, it also ties in quite nicely with the immortal jellyfish because creating those creatures out of glass gives them a certain immortality. Through time, you can still look and observe the shape and the colour of these animals through that model. Because a lot of the jellyfish that I'm responsible for within the collections here at the museum are preserved in a liquid called formaldehyde in a glass jar. And you cannot always see their true structure. There is sometimes a bit of shrinkage or distortion of the animal because of the preservation fluid. Participating in the After the End workshop sparked many different thoughts. I realised that I had a connection with other people's profession or creative practice that I would never have thought of. It's made me think about the title itself, that there perhaps is no after the end. Talking about the immortal jellyfish, cyclical life cycles, indigenous knowledge that's related to that, that is cyclical and seasonal. Just hearing everybody's research produces more questions that are essentially never ending.
That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you for listening. Do join us next time when we hear from theoretical physicist Felix Flicker from Bristol University on whether time exists and living after the end of the universe. I'm Patricia Kingori, and you've been listening to After the End, brought to you by the Ethos Centre at the University of Oxford, funded by the Wellcome Discovery Awards Scheme. Please share this episode on and subscribe to the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more information about the After the End project on our website at www.afterTheEnd.squarespace.com.